தெருவான் சார் நாய். This is the Dharmayobai English sermon for this week. We're just getting started and we're only streaming via YouTube today. There's a Sinhala sermon that's happening on the web radio as well as Facebook, I'm led to believe. But if you're looking forward to the English sermon, then this is where we'll be streaming that on YouTube. We're just about to get started. I'm waiting for someone, one or two of our listeners, to confirm that this transmission is audible. And once I receive that, I will get started. Okay. Theron Sarnai. So we're just getting started now. Just waited a few moments for some of our listeners to join us on YouTube. We're only streaming via YouTube today. The web radio is unavailable to us because it's being used for a Sinhala Deshana. So if you're looking to join the Sinhala Deshana, then please join via the website dharmayobai.org/radio and you will be able to join that. I believe there's also a transmission via the Facebook live utility, so that's available as well. But if it is the English Deshana that you're looking, hoping to join, then you're at the right place. Okay, so let's get started, and as usual, we pay our respects to the Perfect One, the Blessed One, the Perfect One, the most noble of all beings to have ever been born in this universe, and that is none other than the Samma Sambuddha. It is because of his compassion, his infinite compassion, that we have the Dhamma for our salvation today, to help us realize the Four Noble Truths, to help us realize the reality that had been hidden from us for a very long time. And this is why you and I are still in samsara, but we are not helpless, because today we have the Dhamma, and it's because of him. So let us pay our utmost respect and our gratitude to the Samma Sambuddha and be grateful to him for his commitment, his dedication towards ourselves as well as all beings in this universe. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Also, we must reflect on the fact that the reason we have this Dhamma today is because, yes, the Buddha preached the Dhamma to us, but that was 2,500 years ago. if not for many thousands of people, bhikshus, bhikshunis, as well as lay followers, we would not be in receipt of this Dhamma today in the form of the Tripitaka, to understand the Dhamma, and we would not be able to listen to this Dhamma if it wasn't for the Mahasangha, as well as the lay community of Buddhist followers who have been preaching this Dhamma, passing it down from generation to generation in its purest form. And today we are able to understand the suffering that presents to us through life, find the solution to that problem, and apply that solution in a way that means we can put an end to that suffering. So, before we get started, let us not only be grateful to all of those beings who have helped us get this far, but also be grateful to all those beings who might have helped us achieve this human birth in this samsara, on this occasion, in the era of the Tathagata, at a time when the Sambuddha Shasana is very much alive and thriving, at a time when his message, the Lord Buddha's message, is so clearly and so evidently available to us. Because if we weren't human beings right now, if we weren't devas right now, if we weren't brahmas right now, quite simply put, if we weren't born in a blissful plane right now, if we were born in one of the apayas, in one of the hells, there wouldn't be any point in listening to this Dhamma, in preaching this Dhamma, because there would be no opportunity for us to attain any of the noble fruits. So, let us be grateful for that fact, as well as invite any of our past relations, countless relations we might have come along, passed on our way in samsara, perhaps people whom we may have done disservice to, who we may have done dishonor to, at a time when we did not have this Dhamma, when we thought, why regard the Dhamma at all? I need to be the best, I need to be the first, so I don't care what happens to other people. There will have been times when that was the way we thought, when our sentiments were deluded, but today that is not the case. However, as we are today coming together to preach this Dhamma, to practice this Dhamma, to listen to this Dhamma, let us make an open invitation, a very kind, generous invitation. Let us extend that invitation to those beings that we might have been unfair to, we might have disregarded and done disservice to. Let's make that invitation and ask them to join us wherever they may be. If they're able to join us and listen to this Dhamma, then may they do that. Let us also invite the devas, the brahmas, and any celestial being, any sentient being who may be able to listen to this Dhamma and attain the noble fruits. So, as I make this invitation, please join me and extend that invitation to all those who might have helped you on this journey in samsara. Samanta chakvalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammam Rajasans Sunantu Sag Mokadam Dhamma Savan Kalo Ayam Badanta Dhamma Savan Kalo Ayam Badanta Dhamma Savana Kalo Ayam Badanta.
Okay.
This journey is As a reminder again to anyone who might have joined just after we got started, the English stream is being, or the English transmission, Dharmayabai English sermon is being transmitted or broadcast via the YouTube channel. If you're looking to join the singular transmission, that's right now on the web radio and also on the, I believe, on our Facebook page. But if you were hoping to join the English Deshana, then stay where you are and continue to listen to us. And also, please feel free to post any questions you might have, either on the YouTube chat window or on our Skype group, and we'll pick them up depending on how we do for time. So, last week we discussed the five aggregates, and we talked about how we define the world, our universe essentially. We used several examples, one of which was, imagine you're in a room, something's going on in the other room, you have no idea that something is actually going on, but it's just fact that something is, but you don't know what's going on, or that something is going on. You know, say there's three people, you in one room, the second person in another room, and a third person observing what's going on. So the third person is aware that there are two people, one in each room. The other two people just know that what's going on, well, they're only aware of what's going on in the room that they're in. But the third person, you know, they can see everything. They can see both, and therefore, if you look at how each of these three individuals define their universe, how each of these individuals define what real means to them, the first person in room A, say it's person A in room A, their world is just what's going on in that world. It's just what they're doing. Any rupa, vedana, sanya, sankhara, vijnana that they're engaged in, that's all their world is. So as a reminder, rupa being material form, that can be form that is taken in through the eyes, taken in through the through your ears, taken in through your nose, your tongue, your physical body. So think about the sensations that you can experience through your six senses. I mentioned five, the sixth being your mind. So the six senses being sight, sound, smell, taste, texture, and those mental images that you can create at your will. So that is how the first person A in room A, you know, that's their definition of the world. So if you're person A, imagine, you know, you're a family, you've got a sibling, brother, sister. The brother's in his room, he's doing his homework, or perhaps he's playing on a video game on his computer. So his world is just what's going on in that room. He's got a boy's cupboard, it's blue, he's got a bed, it's a bunk bed of some sort perhaps, and he's got some toys, maybe once he used to use in the past, some cars, some you know, there's a Superman figure somewhere. So you know, that's their world. But the sister in the other room, I know I'm generalizing a hell of a lot here, but you know, go with the flow. I'm just trying to use some examples here without trying to dig myself a hole. So you got the sister in the other room, perhaps their favorite color is pink. That's not to say all girls' favorite color is pink. It could be black, it could be any other color. It doesn't really matter, this is just an example. You know, so the girl has, you know, her favorite dresses, her favorite toys, whichever perhaps, you know, pictures that she might like, so on and so forth. So that's their world. But the third person observing both these individuals, standing perhaps in the corridor, looking at the open doors of both these rooms, is able to observe both of these individuals and what's going on in their respective worlds. And so actually to the third person, their world is not only the world that is in the corridor, so perhaps the carpet that they're on, you know, again, think about the information that's coming through their six senses. So their eyes will also be reporting their continuously, not only about the corridor and the environment there, but also what they're seeing in both the rooms, right? So that's how that works. So last week, this is what we discussed, how the world is essentially just that, Rupa Vedana Sanya Sankara Vijnana. You can't define a world outside of that remit. And therefore, we also then, if I remember rightly, I asked you to do some homework. And the homework was to think about the things that you are really attached to, things you really like, and try and analyze these objects, these people. Perhaps it could be a person. It's not always a physical thing. It's not always an object. It could be a person. It could be an occurrence, you know, perhaps something like the sunset or the beach, or perhaps, you know, a waterfall. So these things, you know, they're not physical objects, they're not static objects, but occurrences. Perhaps a rainbow again, or it's your favorite friend, your best friend, or perhaps it's an object, car, toy, you know, as we just discussed. So the homework was, look at them and try and see whether you can spot the Rupa Vedana Sanya Sankara Vijnana, and ask yourself the question, is there anything else other than Rupa Vedana Sanya Sankara Vijnana in these objects? So I keep referring to the Pali terms, or perhaps the Sinhala terms, Rupa Vedana Sanya Sankara Vijnana, only because they convey the meaning best. The English terms nothing wrong with them, it's just there are much deeper meanings than the ones that I have mentioned at a superficial level. When I say the word rupa, you know, there's a deeper meaning to it than just what you're sensing. It's how the mind receives this information and transforms it into a mental image. Perhaps, you know, things we can discuss in future sermons. But for the time being, again, just as a refresher, so rupa is your material form, and again, that's sights, sounds, smells, tastes, texture, and mental images. Again, when I say mental, so material form, mental images are included there. So it's not just the things you can touch, okay? It's not just the things that have weight, mass, and so on and so forth, a length and a width. It's not just those things. Then you have the Vedana. These are feelings. So there are three types of Vedana: Sukha, Dukkha, and Adukkama Sukha. Again, we touched this last week. So good feeling, pleasurable feeling even, unpleasurable feeling, and equanimous feeling. Favorite toy or favorite food, good feeling. Food you really don't like, but you're forced to eat, unpleasurable feeling. And then equanimous, you know, say you're drinking a glass of water when you're not particularly thirsty. That could be something like that. And then there's sanya, so it's the identification or the recognition you give to an object. Remember we said recognition, it's a repeat of something. Cognition is when you get to know something for the first time. Recognition is when you're recalling it. So you need to know what that object was the first time, and then the second time you can recognize it. That's how sanya works. So the first time, if you see an object for the very first time and you don't know what it is, question mark flashing in your mind, and you get into this you feel this sensation of anguish, this sensation of excitement, but not a pleasurable sense of excitement. It's more like a tension. It's like, what is that thing? I really want to know. I'm curious now. And sometimes the curiosity gets the best of you. But that is how that works. So, but if you know it the first time, then the second time someone shows it to you, you're not particularly... you're not particularly bothered, because now you know what it is. So then that's sanya. Then you have sankhara. So these are formations. Formations, because you're constantly creating using the other Rupa Vedana Sanya, you're creating the world around you, And that could be chitta sankhara. So the sankhara you create through your thoughts, using your mind. Then there's vachi sankhara, the world that you create, the formations you create through those through that. I suppose the mental, it's not chitta, but there's a subtle difference here. If I could give an example, it's like, say you wanted to go talk to somebody. Now the thought of you wanting to go talk to somebody, that is a chitta sankhara. This person's a picture of this person comes into your mind. You know what this person looks like, and you can kind of foresee or imagine you having a conversation with that person. And then the vachi sankhara kicks in when you put the words you want to talk, the words you want to say, into it's all in your mind. It's kind of like that feeling when it's at the tip of your tongue, and it's just before you actually get it out. You know, those words, you know, it's how you, when you're in bed trying to, you know, have a conversation, like say you're preparing for an interview the following day, and you're getting ready for bed, but you know you're tensed about this interview you have tomorrow, and in your mind you're answering questions, or perhaps you're preparing for an exam, and you're already writing the exam paper in your mind, and those words, it could be technical terms, it could be non-technical terms, how you're answering that question, these words start coming into your mind. So that is vachi sankhara. Vachi are words. Sankhara is building up those words. So you can only speak physically, as in by using your vocal cords and using your mouth, you can actually only put out those words if you have already developed vachi sankhara beforehand. And you can only do that if you've already done the chitta sankhara. Okay, so that's how it works. And then finally you have Sanya Sankara Vijnana. Vijnana is being your consciousness, and it's consciousness that drives the whole process. And it's also consciousness that gives you the sensation that something's going on. Something's happened. Something's going to happen. All of those things, you know, that's your Vijnana. Again, Vijnana are of two types. There's the Vipaka Vijnana and there's the Karma Vijnana. So Vipaka is your results, your karma, your deeds, the things you do, and the consequences or the rewards. If they're the good things, right? So these are your karma and vipaka. As an example, seeing something is a vipaka or a result. Looking at something is a karma or a deed. In fact, our venerable Dharana Dasa, who was here with me, just before we got started, we were discussing how the mic has a feedback loop. When you have a speaker close by and the mic is picking up a noise and it's sending it through to the computer, and the computer speakers play that sound, the mic picks it up again, and that goes round as a loop, and then every time it does that, it amplifies the sound because you're picking it up and then amplifying that noise, and then you're sending it round again and so forth, and it, you know, in a very short period of time it becomes an unbearable noise. So when we were discussing that, we reflected on how that is very much like how karma and vipaka works. The Lord Buddha says kamma vipaka vattanti vipaka kamma sambhavo tasma punabhavo hoti evan loko pavattati iti. So what does he mean by that? So what he says is vipaka kamma sambhavo. So you get the vipaka, these are the results. Kamma sambhavo, you do the deeds through the results. As an example, you see something through your eyes and now you want to go interact with it. So now you're looking at it. Now you want to go taste it. Now you want to go smell it. You want to go talk to it. Right? So that's how you build karma as a result of some vipaka that has come in through your five senses. So any sight you see, any sound you hear, any smell you can sense, any taste you can sense, and any texture you can feel, these are all vipaka. But if you go and touch something, if you go and look at something, if you go and pay attention, and now you're listening to something, that's a karma. But even in that moment, seeing something is the only thing that can happen. So, you know, imagine you're watching a movie. for every moment that you're looking at it, you're seeing what's going on. So there's constantly karma vipaka. At 1 billionth of a second, there's like 500 million karmas and 500 million vipakas. That's how it works. You can only see something. What you can try and do is look at it, and then the vipaka is you seeing it. I hope that's clear. If you didn't have vipaka, no matter how much you looked at something, you wouldn't get the image coming through your eyes, because chakkuncha paticca rupecha uppacchadi chakku vinyana. So this is something that comes in the Tripitaka. Chakkuncha paticca rupecha uppacchadi chakku vinyana. So what that means, so chakkuncha paticca rupecha uppacchadi chakku vinyana is chakkuncha is your eye, rupecha is the sight you're seeing, uppacchadi chakku vinyana is the eye consciousness. And that is always a vipaka. So the karma you're doing is looking at it. If you stop looking at it, then there's no vipaka. Right? Okay, so that's how that works. And this week, I think we were looking to talk about how the world can also be defined in terms of apo, tejo, vayo, patavi. So when the Buddha talks about the four ultimate truths, you know, all of these other things are conventional. You know, whether you're talking about mother, father, brother, sister, car, school, chair, dog, cat, rainbow, all of these things you can give a name to, all of these things you refer to something as, and also anything that one person might refer to one way and another person in another way, you know, all of those things are conventional realities. None of them are ultimate realities. So the only four ultimate realities that exist are Chitta, Chaitasika, Rupa and Nibbana. And it was only the Lord Buddha that introduced these ultimate realities to us. So these ultimate realities are Chitta being your thoughts. And where does this Chitta happen? It happens in the mind. Chaitasika are the mental factors, the conditions that shape those thoughts, and then they go on to become good thoughts or bad, so wholesome or unwholesome thoughts. Rupa being the form, right? So again, going back, remember Rupa Vedana? So again, Rupa being form there. And then you have Nibbana. Clearly that's Nirvana. So these are the only four realities, the four ultimate realities. You can't dissect them any further, you can't break it into any more parts. Chitta is ultimate, Chaitasika ultimate. So, for example, if you took a person, you could break them up into many different parts. If you, let's take that example, you take the person's, let's say you take their take their skin, for example, okay? And now you start breaking that up into its constituent parts. So immediately you go down into the various layers of the skin. You break that down again, you get into something called the subcutaneous layers, and now you're getting into the chemical composition of that. You know, you could say it's got this percentage of it is carbohydrates, this percentage of it is proteins, this percentage of it is fat, and so on. And then if you broke that down even further, then you get, you know, so much carbon, so much hydrogen, so much oxygen, so much nitrogen, and you can break it down into the elements, right? But then that, if you broke that down into further parts, then you have protons, so many neutrons, so many electrons, and then positrons and neutrinos, and you know, you can keep going down into the atomic level, subatomic level, you know, until you get to this ultimate realities, which is what the Lord Buddha says. Because the reason we are only talking about subatomic particles at this stage is because that's how far science have come. But you know, one day science is going to come and say, actually, we found something new. You know, they're talking about the God's particle, right? But science is only true for us until something new comes along. And then that's going to change the entire you know, what we know as science to be true is going to change. People never thought there were microorganisms. You know, people thought diseases were things that were created by gods and demons, right? And therefore they feared gods and demons, and they thought, you know, influenza was something that was given to them by a god because they angered a god. But then later on, you know, science advanced and they found actually there's a virus that causes that. So science is only true for as long as something else comes along and disproves the former, and now you accept the latter as being the root, as being the truth for that time being. But such is not the case with ultimate realities. You can't break it down any further. You can't disprove it. You can try, but you're not going to be able to do it. This is why the Buddha presents. So if you when you go into studying Abhidhamma, Abhidhamma is the study of the ultimate truths, Citta Chaisika Rupa Nibbana. So the rupa. In its most basic form, rupa, there are the Shuddhastaka, or the pure eight, as it's called. Pure eight because they're not tainted by anything, and it's available. These eight elements are available in absolutely anything you can think of, anything physical object, anything you can imagine. It's there. I'm not talking about thoughts, I'm not talking about ideas. I'm talking about actual things you can touch, you can see, you can hear. You know, it's available. These eight are available in that. So whether it's a chair you're talking about, whether it's your favorite pizza you're talking about, whether it's a glass of water and the water inside it, whether it's fire you're talking about, all of this eight is available in that. So what are these eight? You have Apo, Tejo, Vayo, Patavi, Varna, Gandha, Rasa, Oja. Now let's look at what that translates to in English. So you have Apo, which is you can take for now as being water, okay? But it's not really water. It's the quality of water. So the flowing quality of something, whether it's water has a lot of it. This is why they conventionally we use the word water to describe apo, but that's not because that is water. But water has a lot of that quality. If you think about, you know, an ice cream, once it starts melting, right, it's gone from a lot of patavi to now a lot of apo. That's what's happened. So these eight can transform, and it's in a continuous transformation. So if you think about something like an ice cube, now that's a good example. An ice cube has a lot of patavi at one point when it's ice, then it starts melting and now you have a lot of apo, and again if you continue to heat it, then it becomes vapor, right, and now it's got vayu. And then perhaps it becomes steam, and so it has a so the amount of tejo in that keeps increasing. So as you can see, the apo tejo vayo patavi keeps shifting, but ultimately that's what you have in there. You can't add anything new, you can't take anything out of that. Okay, so apo there is the flowing element, but if you think water, then it's not quite water, but the quality of. Then you have vayo, so tejo even. So tejo is the heat element. Now generally that's taken as fire, but you know, an ice cream has tejo. Ice cream is not fire, it's the direct opposite even. Or an ice cube, we just took the example of that, right? So that has tejo in it. So tejo is how much heat there is in it. It's a quality. Okay, so I hope that's clear. Then there's apo tejo vayo, that is the flowing quality, so generally taken to be as air. It's not quite air, because even air has all four of these things, in fact all eight of the pure eight, okay, but it's the quality of it's the flowing quality of air. So apo tejo vayo, then you have patavi. Patavi is taken to be the earth element, but it's not earth, it's the solid nature of it. So at the basic level, now we're talking, you know, if you think about physics, you've got a solid quality. How solid is that object? How airy is that object? How much heat is there in that object? and how flowy, how I don't know if there's a word for that. I'm sure there is a word for it, just not coming into my mind right now. It's how freely something can flow. Fluidity. Yes, that's good. Thank you. So it's the fluidity of that object. So that's the apo tejo vayo patavi. Then you have varna gandha rasa oja. So varna being color. So all objects have color. Now it could be white, it could be black, it could be brown, it could be yellow. It doesn't matter. It could be colorless. So you could say water is colorless. But that even has varna in it. It's just the fact that it's colorless, but that is the quality of the varna that's in it. Okay, so it's the fact that all things have color. Then you have varna gandha. Gandha is smell. So all things have some kind of smell. Could, you know, it doesn't matter whether you think it's a good smell or a bad smell. It's a smell. Every object has a smell. Sometimes you might think, well, actually, I can't smell it. Well, that's just because you're not sensitive enough to it. You know, think about animals and how they can hear things that you and I can't, or how they can smell things that you and I can't as human beings, because you know, our sensory range does not extend to those ranges, right? A bat. Good example, you know, they can hear sounds that you and I can't, ultrasound, right? So that's how the world works. So who knows, perhaps water actually has a color, it's just that you and I can't see it. Quite possible. So varna gandha, so that was the smell. Rasa being taste. So again, all objects have a taste. Just because you and I can't taste it, you know, with our very basic five tastes, just because we can't taste it doesn't mean something doesn't have a taste. You know, one could lick the floor and say, I can't taste anything here, but that's just because your tongue is not sensitive enough to it. Someone else might be able to. And then you have oja. So oja is the quality of nutrient. All objects have some kind of nutritional value, nutritional quality. You know, sometimes you might see insects on an old cloth. Or an old towel that you've put on a clothesline for many days, and you know go to use it, and you see, oh, there's lots of ants on it, and you're wondering, what are ants? You know, there's nothing on this. I just washed it and put it on the clothesline. What are they after? You just don't know that, you know, actually that's got some kind of nutritional value. And again, to you and me, this is the thing. The world to you and I is just what we can experience through our six senses. That doesn't mean a world exists beyond that. This is the point we need to get into our minds. The space didn't exist until man decided to go into space. The nine planets didn't exist. It was only our Earth that existed until people began to think, hang on a second, what's that star I see? That's not blinking. You know, and then they started asking questions, and they, you know, venture into space, and they landed on Mars, and they decided, ah, okay, so there is another planet. And then the world extends beyond the current point. So that's it. This is how our world begins to grow. The problem with this is, there's nothing wrong with the world being so vast, because if you take a Sammasambuddha, his world is infinite. There is no limit to how much he can grasp. It's infinite. You know, you could ask him about the planet that's, you know, 20 billion light years from here, and he'll give you everything that there is to know about it. But he's not attached to it. That's why that, you know, nothing brings him sorrow, nothing brings him unsatisfactoriness or suffering. The problem with your and my world is, you know, we are attached to those things. We are attached to what happens in my room. I'm attached to what happens on my computer game. I'm attached to what happens to my Superman toy. And my sister is attached to what happens to her dolls. So this is how the world works. But if you're not attached to these things, then it doesn't matter how big the world is. Okay? So that's how the world can be seen as apo tejo vayo patavi varna gandha rasa oja. Now, that's all of that was just information. We don't have these sermons just to educate people. There isn't a point in doing that. We could be doing some better things with our time. The reason that it's important to try and understand the world and to try and get some kind of to be able to see the world as the as Apotejo Vayu Patavi and Vanna Gandha Rasa Oja, the pure eight, is so that actually if you I don't know if any of you might have had the opportunity to study the Rahulovada Sutra. So this is a discourse that was given by the Lord Buddha to Rahula, Venerable Rahula, who was obviously his son when he was a layperson. Venerable Rahula, and in this discourse, the Lord Buddha advises Rahula to develop the quality of being Apo. He advises him to develop the quality of Tejo. He advises him to develop the quality of Vayu, and he advises him to develop the quality of Patavi. Now, one might ask, how does one do that? How do I develop the quality of Apo, Tejo, Vayu, Patavi? You know, is that really in my control? Can I change the Apo, Tejo, Vayu, Patavi? Well, yes, you can. And sometimes yogis who meditate for many decades, they distance themselves from everybody else, you know, in the Himalayas and perhaps, you know, other places where you have yogis, you know, they focus their minds on. And this is what you do when you meditate on kasinas. So there could be Apo kasina, Tejo kasina, Vayu kasina, and Patavi kasina. And what you're doing then is actually you're thinking, you're meditating on nothing but that quality of an object. So as an example, you might have a yogi who lights a fire, and he sits in front of the fire and meditates on the heat element of that fire for many years. That's all he does. He'll sit in front of it. He might take a break to, for his necessities, maybe grab a meal. But other than that, his focus is purely on the heat aspect of that fire. You might have another yogi who's got perhaps a clay pot, and that'll be in front of him, and he'll stare at nothing else. You know, this is, you may think about how much discipline he's got to have within him to be able to do that. He's just staring at that, nothing else. Perhaps some people don't even blink, and they focus on that object and go Patavi, 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 Patavi. He's not, what he's trying to do is not let his mind wander elsewhere. He tries to not let his mind wander about his home, you know, about anything else, perhaps even about the Apo in that object or the Tejo in that object. He's just focused on the Patavi. And what happens then is, when you do that, you develop jhanas. These are non-Arya jhanas though. These are not the noble jhanas. These are the anarya dhyanas. You develop these jhanas and you then develop supramundane powers, whereby you can then control those aspects of those objects. So, for example, you can control the Patavi nature of objects. And if you develop your mind to that level, then you can increase the amount of Patavi in a lake. And then you can start walking on it. This is how people walk on water. I'm not talking about, this is how all people walk on water. There'll be wizards and magicians who do all sorts of tricks. But as a yogi, you know, you might have heard of these stories, how people have these supernatural powers to control these things, and this is how they do that. Or perhaps, you know, they can look at some wood, and through their mind they'll start a fire. This is how they develop that skill. But now, while that might sound fascinating, science should be used where science should be used. Right? We don't have to discard science altogether. You know, science is of benefit to us. Why do I spend 50 years of my life trying to light a fire when I can just use a matchstick and a matchbox? I mean, science has given me that gift. A box of matches is what? 20 rupees? You just take a matchstick out of it, light the thing, and you've got a fire. If I've spent 50 years of my life staring at a fire, and what I'm hoping to be able to do is develop a supernatural power so that now I can light a fire somewhere, I think there's probably better use to life than that. If I wanted to walk on water, when if all that's allowing me to do is get to the other side, well, I've got a boat for that. I can get on a ship. I can get on a raft. I can get on a hovercraft. Right? I can do all of those things. Or I could swim. I don't have to worry so much about getting to the other side of the water. So, you know, where science can be used for these things, let's use science. Let's use our minds for much more valuable things, like trying to attain Nibbana. So you've then got to think, well, what did the Buddha then really mean when he say, Rahula, cultivate the quality of Apo. Rahula, cultivate the quality of Tejo, Vayu and Patavi. If you think about, let's take one of these things, Patavi. Okay, and as I said, you can think about the earth when you're talking about Patavi. Because the earth, the ground, now you're talking about solid ground, you put your foot down, you can feel how solid it is, you punch the ground and guess who's going to get hurt? Ain't the ground, right? So, you know, this has a lot of solidness. What is the earth like? What is the ground like? You know, you could throw flowers at the ground and it's not going to go, oh, I love those flowers, can I have some more, please? It's not going to go, that person thinks so highly of me. You know, I'm the ground, me. I'm so great. Or, you know, you could go and throw some rotten eggs at it. Or, you know, you could throw some old food. You know, think about where you dispose your garbage. Where do you think when you flush the toilet, all of that goes? It all goes into the ground, into the earth, right? So you're not only throwing the good stuff away. You could throw as much, you know, you could throw incense sticks, you could throw flowers at it, you could throw, you know, you could stand by the ground, by the earth, you know, just walk outside your door, look at the ground and go, oh, you ground, you're such a good thing, how good you are. You could sing as many praises as you like. Guess what the ground's going to do? Absolutely nothing. Or you could go and stand there and shout at it. Guess what it's going to do? Absolutely nothing. Nothing at all. So, when the Lord Buddha says, Rahula, develop the quality of Patavi, what he meant by that is, Rahula, become like the earth. You know, people destroy the earth every day. All this pollution that people do, right? All the garbage they throw at it. You know, just walk along the streets. I mean, I don't know in other countries, but in a lot of third world developing countries, you know, there's a lot of rubbish along the streets. People don't think twice before they chuck something outside, you know, through their car shutters, right? Through the windows. It's just a done thing in some countries. And so when you're walking along the road, you know, sometimes when perhaps monks go on Pindapatha for, you know, round for alms, then, you know, you have bits of glass, you have bits of old cans of beer, you know, and these could, you know, clearly cause harm, but this is the nature of the world we live in, and that's the nature that of the earth. Regardless of what you throw at it, you can't, you know, it doesn't respond differently to either person. It remains unshattered. It remains unshaken, right? So be like the earth. People will come and throw praise at you. Be like the earth. People will come and scorn you. Be like the earth. Be unshakable. That is the quality of Patavi. And then he says, Rahula, be like, develop the quality of Tejo. So Tejo, again, as we said, is the fire. So what is a fire like? You throw sandalwood at the fire, and guess what it does? Burns it. You throw rubbish at it, and guess what the fire does? Burns it. Regardless of what you throw at fire, it's always going to burn it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't favor the good stuff to the bad stuff. And it doesn't say, oh no, don't give me all that rubbish. I'm only here to do the good stuff. It's not like that. So what if you could, as a person, develop that quality within you? Now think, you know, we've always talked about the atalo dhamma, the vicissitudes of life, where you get praise and you get scorn, you get loss and you get profits, right? People say good things, people say bad, you get blame and praise, you know, in equal measure sometimes. But what we generally tend to do is when we hear the good stuff, we go and attach ourselves, we build hopes and expectations, and oh, I love this person, he always says nice things about me. But that is only going to last for as long as it's going to last. Remember, that person can change in one moment. One thought is all it takes. So today I was discussing with some other novice monks, and I was saying, you know, it takes many years to build, to become admirable, to become to get someone's praise. Sometimes many decades to develop that, but it only takes one moment to destroy that. So you've got to learn to be like the fire. Regardless of what people throw at you, you just got to accept it. The fire doesn't chuck something back. When you throw garbage at it, the fire doesn't throw it back at you. Take this away with you. Don't bring it to me again. Just give me the good stuff. That's not how the fire works. Okay. So that's the tejo quality. Then you have the vayo quality. Okay. So that is like the air. So how does the air work? The air is like, again, you know, people, there are good smells and bad smells. So think about at home, you've got yourself a bottle of perfume, you spray that at you, obviously some of that goes into the air, and what does the air do? Does the air go, oh, can I have a little bit more of that please? No, it doesn't. And then what about when you get a foul smell from your toilet? What do? You open the windows. What are you doing here now? So you're inviting the air into your bathroom, into your toilet, to take the bad smells away with it. Does the air go, I'm not coming that way, shut the windows, I don't care, you've got your windows open, I'm not coming in. No, the air doesn't do like that. The air comes in, it sweeps away all the bad smells, and it leaves a good smell inside, or it just, you know, neutralizes the bad odors. So what if you can be like the air? People will throw good stuff at you, people throw bad stuff at you, people say good things to you, people say bad things to you. They'll blame you, they'll praise you, they'll shout at you. You know, they'll be very nice to you, say good words. But regardless of this, if you can be an unshakable character, you can throw good or bad, I'm gonna accept anything. That's fine with me. Remember, I've said in the past, when someone, as an Arya, all you get from this world, this world is full of teachers. That's all you see. Teachers. Teachers who are here to teach you, who are here to help you get to Nibbana. In fact, it's like, you know how sometimes people, some students, they go to school and they study the basic theory. Let's say math. Okay? You study the basic theory of calculus. And then you have a tuition class. In the tuition class, you invite a tuition master, and all you're asking that master to do is sit down with you and work through a number of examples, a number of sums. You're not asking him to teach you the basics. You've already learned the basics. What you want to do is now practice. Actually, the world is like that. The world is full of tuition masters. How so? If you've learned the theorem, if you've learned the basic principle of anicca dukkha anatta from a Kalyana Mitra, from an Arya, and you then become an Arya, all around you are tuition masters. What they're helping you do are giving you new sums every day. Oh, so you know calculus, right? Try this one. Try this one. Try that one. So if you know the principle of anicca dukkha anatta and you're trying to fight with raga, dvesha, moha, here's an opportunity to fight with raga. Here's an opportunity. Now, you know, does that trigger dvesha in you? Try and fight that. Here's an opportunity that might excite moha in you. Now fight that. That's how the world is, full of tuition masters. And so, even if someone comes and say, you know, imagine you haven't done anything bad, you know, you're faultless. But someone comes to you and they start shouting at you, They're accusing you of something you haven't done. Well, what you've got to do on that occasion is actually ask yourself, how much does this really bother me? You know, all that's happening is someone's come in here, standing in front of me, or perhaps on the end of a telephone line, and they're shouting. These are just words. What I choose to do with those words is up to me. I can either take it as scorn, as blameful, or I can just take it as words. It's just noise. I don't have to get all upset about it, because that person can't upset me. Whether I become upset or not is purely down to me. What if you were deaf? What difference would it make how much that person shouts at you? No difference at all. So where's the difference then? The person is the same person saying the same things to the same person, except this person is not able to take any of that in. But be like a deaf person when someone's shouting at you. That's not to say don't take anything of value that they're giving you. But you can just take the good stuff, as in, here's a fault, go fix it. Thank you very much. But then you don't have to take the stuff you don't want, which is, oh, that's going to make me feel really bad. I'm really unhappy about that. I didn't do that. I didn't do this. You know, now you're just retaliating. No need for that. Okay? So be like the air. And then finally, be like the water. How so? Well, think about the things that people throw at water. You know, it could be rose water that goes into the water, or it could be toilet water that goes into the water. You know, all of these things get washed away into the sea, right? Sometimes when you have, at the end of a religious ceremony, if you have holy water, right, eventually these are all going to end up in the ocean. Eventually, right? And also the toilet water that you flush, that's going to end up in the ocean. But the ocean doesn't say, I don't want this, I don't want that. It just says, whatever you want to chuck at me, just chuck at me. I'll take it. I'll accept it. So what if you could be like the ocean? And yet, even after accepting all of those bad things into the ocean, right? If someone still wants to go and bathe in the ocean, the water is still clean. The water is still good. You can still go and jump in the ocean and bathe to your heart's content. How so? Be like the ocean. People will come in and scold you, people will come and shout at you, people will come and scorn you and say bad things. But when someone wants to come and take something good from you, and it could even be the person that actually flushed that toilet water into you, into the ocean, the same person comes the next day and now he wants to have he wants to play in the water and actually bathe in the ocean. Does the ocean say, no you don't, you know, yesterday you flushed your toilet and all of that water came into me, I'm not going to let you, you know, come and bathe in my waters. No, the ocean doesn't say that. The ocean says, yeah, you're welcome. Be like the ocean. Be like the water. So this is what the Lord Buddha advises Rahula, Venerable Rahula in fact. You know, be like the earth. Be like the fire. Be like the air. And be like the water. This is what he means when he says, Rahula, cultivate the quality of Apo. Cultivate the quality of Tejo. Cultivate the quality of Vayu and cultivate the quality of Patavi. So, what I've tried to explain today is, you know, you can see the qualities of Apo, Tejo, Vayu, Patavi in all objects. Varna, Gandha, Rasa, Oja, you know, that's available in all objects. Sometimes our senses can't perceive these, but that's not to say it doesn't exist. You know, you and I, we can't see radio waves. That's not to say it doesn't exist. You switch on a radio, and voila, it's picking up these radio waves. Well, I can't see it. Well, just because you can't see it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Look through an electron microscope and you'll see a whole new world that you never thought existed, right? Just because you can't see it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And the same applies for the hells and the heavens, right? And the whole universe that the Buddha said, you know, you're asking me questions, I can give you answers, but you're not going to believe me. Why? Because you can't see it. You know, the Preta world, right, the asura world and the nirayas, the hells, all of these things exist. Just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not there. But all of these things are ultimately apo, tejo, vayo, patavi, varna, gandha, rasa, oja. But that's just information. You know, you can develop the kasinas if you want, really wanted to, and you know, after 20-30 years of spending your life in meditation, you might be able to light a fire. or perhaps, you know, move the arms of a... I was reading a book today, earlier on, and it said how there was this person, a yogi, who had trained his mind, and after many years, I think about 50 years, he'd started very young, and now, you know, he's a really old man. Now he's able to move the arms of a clock with his, you know, through the powers of his mind. Well, I can do the same just by, you know, turning the wheel on the back of the clock. It didn't take me 50 years to get there. Right? You know, use science for what you can use it for, but don't use science to attain Nibbana. You know, use the Buddha's Dhamma, use the meditation techniques he's taught us, use the Satra Satipatthana, the four modes of mindfulness to attain Nibbana. That you cannot do through science. You know, use a screwdriver to screw a nail in. Don't use it as a hammer. Use a hammer for that. If you use a screwdriver to do what you want to do with a hammer, then you're not going to get the job done. And you're probably going to damage your screwdriver as well. When a hammer can quite easily and simply do that for you, and in much less effort, with much less effort, right? So, hopefully, that has been useful. Now, there was a question that was asked about, was it memory? And what was the question again? Memory and Namarupa. Okay. What was the question? Okay, so the question was, is memory and nama rupa the same? So we're moving away from the topic we were discussing just a few minutes ago. Is memory and nama rupa the same? So the answer to that is, the way that nama rupas are generated is through the abhisankara process. So remember, avidya paccaya sankara, sankara paccaya vijnana, vijnana paccaya nama rupa. Okay, so clearly an arahant doesn't do that. An arahant has nama, but he doesn't generate the rupas. Okay, so these namas that get generated, you might have heard the expression rupanjirati magjana nama gotta najirati. So nama gotta are essentially, so going back to that phrase, rupanjirati magjana nama gotta najirati. What it's trying to say is the material form or the rupa will decay and come to, you know, and cease. Think about, you know, time when you've gone on holiday. We discussed going on holiday some weeks ago, right? So the things you did on the holiday, that's gone, right? The food you ate, you know, that's no longer in the same state. It's just gone back to apote jovaya patvi varna gandha rasa oja in another form now. Okay, the things you did, perhaps if you went into a farm and petted animals, you know, all of those things are, you know, they've gone. Those events, those incidents, those rupas are not going to come back. However, the memories to do with those incidents, the memories to do with those occasions, and the memories that were generated when you were taking in all those rupa, vedana, sanya, sankara, vijnana, are still there, and these memories. So living life is nothing but adding on moments of memory to this infinitely long chain of memory. So nama gotta is simply that. From the time we started coming through in samsara, and don't ask me when, don't ask me where that all started. I haven't found an answer to that. I'm not bothered about where that is. All I'm worried about is how it's going to come to an end. You know, these strings, if you can imagine them, you know, with beads on the string. So these beads are all the memories, and the string is our journey in samsara. Okay, you can jump from one bead to the other and go back to any memory that you wanted. And as we said earlier, the Lord Buddha, you know, in his infinite power, he's able to go back any length, any distance. And not only just, you know, his memory, he can access the namagotas of other beings, animals, devas, brahmas, humans, and so on. Okay, but if you take, for example, there are yogis again. You know, going back to the story about yogis, how yogis were able to develop the patavi or the tejo kasinas. Some yogis actually spend their time trying to attain, you know, once you get to the fourth jhana, chaturtha dhyana, you can then focus on your past births, pubbe sati nivasa anusati jnana. So that's the power that you can get at that point. So actually, some yogis used to do this even before the time of the Buddha, and they were able to go as far back as when they, you know, at a time when they were in the Brahma worlds. Now in the Brahma worlds, you know, life is extremely long. You're talking about 500 eons. 500 eons. And so, unfortunately, these yogis did not have the mental capacity to traverse the 500 eons and see every moment in that 500 eons and what happened. Because you have to go through that to get to, well, what happened before the 500 eons. You know, that was the limit of their mental capacity. And so therefore they thought, oh, there's no start to this. This is where I was. You know, this is infinitely long. There was no start to this. I wasn't anywhere else before this. This was the start of our journey in samsara. And so now they're thinking, well, if I go back there, I'm going to be there forever. This is why when we talk about abhisankara, we talk about punya abhisankara, apunya abhisankara, and aninja abhisankara. Aninja abhisankara are the abhisankaras that take you into the immaterial worlds, into the immaterial Brahma planes. Because this is where people think, if we go here, life is going to be permanent. There's not going to be any death. But the Buddha, in his infinite power, he was able to see, well, life is still limited, even in the immaterial Brahma worlds. Even there, after the 500 eons have passed away, what if you become a cow or a dog going to the apayas, or become a human being? You're still back in samsara. What's the point? So even going into a Brahma world is pointless. So put a stop to samsara. The point I was trying to make was, by reading this, think of it like if you used one of those old tape recorders. You have a tape that sits in the cassette, and you can keep pulling on that tape until you get to the end of it, right? So imagine on this tape is recorded various bits of that song, or if it was some kind of recording, you know, say it was music, you know, various notes are recorded on this. So similarly, as you keep pulling on this Namagotta, you're getting each of the notes that were played at that time. So that could be the things you did, the thoughts you had, the speech, you know, the things you said, and so on. The chitta karma, the manok, the kaya karma, and the vachi karma. Okay, and that's how these namagotas are built. So to summarize that, memory is not the same as nama rupa, but memory is an impression of the nama that is generated at that time. When you have developed vijnana paccaya nama rupa, at that moment in time, the process of generating that nama rupa from your vijnana releases an energy, and that energy creates utuja rupa, or for now take it as a mental impression, and that mental impression gets tagged on to that infinitely long chain, and that's how you can go back for as long as you want. Okay, is there another question? All right. Okay. So, so that brings us to the end of this week's program. If you didn't listen to last week's, then I would encourage you to listen to that as well, because there we made an introduction into the five aggregates. This week we were talking about the eight pure eight, the Suddhastaka, and how that forms the all of the rupas that we see around us. But also we gave the interpretation that was given to Venerable Rahula by the Lord Buddha, and he said, you know, cultivate these qualities within you, because ultimately that's what we need to do. Just gaining knowledge is not really going to get us anywhere. It's how we apply that to our lives. So try and be earth-like, try and be fire-like, try and be water-like, and try and be air-like. And that way, if you can be like that, then no matter what the world throws at you, you will be unshakable. That unshakable character will be able to fight any amount of raga, any amount of dvesha, and any amount of moha. and be able to put an end to this rebirth cycle, samsara. So I hope that has been useful. May all beings who joined us today, I hope all beings that joined us today found this useful. I hope it helped them to attain Margapala, and I hope all beings are able to end this rebirth cycle. May they all attain Nibbana in this birth itself. Theruvan Sarnai.